Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. last word. Friday, June the 20th, 2014. I'm Michael Lawson along with Thomas Fortenberry. How are you, Thomas?
Very good, very good. Sad news to lose a giant of jazz, man.
Horace Silva had to play the whole thing. Message for my father. Horace Silva passed away about 2 days ago, and he was one of the most highly regarded pianists and composers in jazz anywhere. Played the guitar, too. Then he switched, said, I'm going to play the piano. He was 85 years old and was a pioneer in the rheumatic jazz style known as hard bop. And Silva began his career as a saxophonist in clubs in Connecticut.
Multi-talented.
Multi-talented. So David Adams, we'll talk about David in a few minutes, right up your alley. That's where he's from. But after he moved to New York in the 50s, he switched to piano and began performing in the Blue Note Jazz Club and was recognized for many of his standards, include Sister Sadie, the Preacher, and Filthy McNasty. Jackie Gleason used to say, gets good. His family came from Cape Verde, the coast of Africa, and Silva was influenced by the folk music from the Portuguese-speaking islands off Africa, which was Cape Verde. He said, and one of his earliest musical influences was his father, who played multiple instruments, the violin, guitar, mandolin. And
This is a truly musical family, right?
Oh, absolutely a musical family. Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, I don't know many that had as much to do with music as Horace Silva. And said
well, the thing that's astounding is not just that he's, you know, good at his instrument and became famous at it, but at so many instruments. I mean, he's so versatile.
At so many instruments, absolutely right. And he played with Lester Young, Miles Davis, Art Blakey, and bands. He had the Horace Silva Quintet, and he was just unbelievable. In the late 70s and 80s, he experimented with a larger group and for a different style, but from midway through the 80s, he returned to the hard bop. In the 90s, created some worthy successes to many classical albums he made during his 28 years at the Blue Note. That's where he got all his stuff. He played the piano style that was involved in what he called sharply defined bluesy right-hand phrasing over a grumbling left-hand bass, unlike the style of many other players. I mean, this is a man. He played everything. Saxophone.
Yep.
Just like his father. He played the bass. And a lot of people say you can play the saxophone. And he said that he could do two things with either hand at the same time. He said that's why his left hand, he called the left hand bass, his left hand was like a grumbling hand that tried to overwhelm the bluesy right hand phrasing. So they were fighting one another when he was playing on the piano, and that's why he got all that stuff. But I had to play that. I had to play that for because Art has gone. And that's David. That is your song, your man. Okay. And speaking about David, David is in the hospital.
Oh no.
Yes. We wish him the best. I gave him a piece of my mind because it's no reason for him to be there. But you know, like so many people, they ignore their medicine, and bingo, I mean, you can't do that. Your wife needs to
No, you can't.
That's the same thing.
My wife's family, they have, diabetes on that side of the family, and it is not something that you want to ignore or play around with.
Hell no. I mean, you know, it's something that you cannot be fooling around with. You just cannot be fooling around with it. and you need to have as I say, hey, you got a PDA? Set your daggone PDA for the time to go off when you need it every day. I mean, come on, give me a break here. You need to set your PDA to remind you if that's what it takes. If that's what it takes, then you need to do that.
Yeah, that's one of those things that today's medicine, they've got it. It's fully manageable if you just stay on top of it.
Well, we'll talk a little more
anyway,
about that.
Anyway, wishing the People's Champion the best there. Hope he gets better.
Yes.
And
yes,
see him soon.
We have a lot to talk about, so now it's going to give him a few days to calm down, because what we were going to talk about, he was going to explode. So we just give him some time to calm down now, and when he comes back, we'll be talking about that.
Give him a little rest. But this has been a crazy week. That's why he's upset.
It's been a crazy week, and that's been a crazy week. Well,
I mean, look, who could have ever...
My grandson all week.
Oh, well, you know, that's totally different. And
yeah,
I was
thinking,
speaking of grandsons, you know, little Eddie Munster, you know, there were some big changes over at the Horror House.
Yeah, the Horror House. Absolutely. The Horror House. Come in here and say a few words for the people. And tell how you're treating your grandpa.
Say hello. Hello. Say hello to Tom.
Hi. You running rampant in the studio?
Greg Rossmore.
Greg Rossmore, eat my pretzel. Well, he's going to be gone in about 15 minutes as soon as the grandmother gets here. So I'll be able to have some pretzels and a little bit of apple pie.
Ooh,
oh, I'm sorry, Tom.
Apple
you're
pie.
Not here. I'm sorry, you're not,
hey,
you're
that's
not here.
That's just pure cruel,
that's
Mike.
Not, I'm almost finished with that, so I have to get some more apple pie, but you can't get this at Harris Teeter.
Oh, that's all right. You just keep talking that way, and I'm going to throw up in the corral and let those buffalo run.
Oh, okay. let's talk about wait a minute. Hold on. Let's talk about somebody who really wants to help people to vote.
I want to make sure that it's easy to vote, but also hard to cheat. That's why I spent any of my time talking about voter ID, not about early voting.
That's none other than our criminal, well, he's one of the criminal governors, Scott Walker.
Yeah.
That's why he wants to make everything hard and easy to vote. That's what he said.
Now, easy to vote for him, you mean?
Well, no. I don't think that was necessary to say that you think it's going to be making it easier for him. I mean, there are a lot of people who want to make it easier to vote. I mean, you know, there's thousands of people. This whole thing about voting here, we have to make it easier for people to vote. And when you don't do that, what happens? What happens when you don't make it easier for people to vote? Huh? This is what happens. Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. No, this is what happens.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
So, I mean, who's that guy? He must be a renegade. Well, back 20 years ago, he was a renegade. He now is the Regressive Party of the United States of America. Yes. That's him, Paul Ryrick. The father of the conservative movement, doesn't want everybody to vote. So I guess he would just kick Scott Walker in the butt then, huh? Because Scott Walker, he wants to make it easier to vote. Well,
except for that little part about you know, you tend to forget there. Scott's got two sides of his mouth. See.
Oh, two sides of his mouth. Well, you're saying the side that that he's at the center of a campaign finance criminal conspiracy with your main man, the Rover?
Hey, we've known for years. Rove has been dodging prison time over and over and over during the Clinton years, during the Gore election, because he's always coordinating, scheming, you know, funneling monies and power to people.
Well, he's the one that outed Valerie Plame.
Yep.
He got away with it.
Though, if you remember, one of the scandals he didn't go to jail for with that and other scandals was was found out when they went investigating to get his emails and to subpoena his documents that all of the government work was deleted, not used, and all of the actual work was done on a secret laptop, which he then said, oops. He lost the hard drives, you know. But it was illegal for him to do all of that business that he did on private hard drives, not on government computers. But that's how he ran all the campaigns of the elections back during the Bush-Cheney years.
Well,
remember,
I'd
they
like
got in quite a bit of trouble for coordinating different states and funneling funds between them. Do you remember they were doing it out of the White House on election night?
On Scott Walker's behalf, this comes out of Washington today. Just prosecutors allege that Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker was at the center of a criminal conspiracy to illegally coordinate the activities of independent conservative groups during recall elections in his state in 2011 and 2012, according to documents released Thursday from and first reported on by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Prosecutors contend in documents that Walker had direct knowledge that his top deputies, R.L. Johnson and Deborah Jodell, were involved in alleged illegal coordination between the Walker campaign and 12 other conservative groups. Now, we're at the beginnings of going, because we're creating our own pact here. Oh, no, please, let me say, I'm looking at this at the Eddie Munster right now, where he jumped on one of the people from the IRS claiming, I don't believe you. You're lying. This is supposed to be, you know, that wasn't even done when who's that fool? The fool said McCarthy. McCarthy never called anybody a liar. But these people have gone so far overboard, so racist, and so nasty. You know, my mother used to say, you can't socialize with anybody like that that has the mentality of a peanut. Because
well,
when they have the mentality of a peanut, they have a couth of an ass.
Well, my father used to say when I'd get all bent out of shape about something somebody said back home, he'd say, hey, son, you just can't argue with stupid.
Can't. Stupid is stupid.
The problem is these guys are affecting literally the faith and credibility of the country with all the shutdowns and the embarrassing things they do. And they're undermining government itself, all of our people's faith in government. They have shouted out insults during the president's speech at the State of the Union. They constantly berate him on air, on TV. They call him illegitimate. He's not an American. He's some kind of a terrorist plant and some nefarious scheme and all this kind of stuff. But all it does in the end is undermine belief in the government. And it destroys our institutions, which is kind of, you know, the Tea Party's wet dream, so that they shrink it down and drown it in a bathtub like they've claimed for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very disheartening.
Absolutely correct. Well, you know, the thing is that it goes on to say here, in one unsealed email from Walker to Karl Rove, chief political strategist to former President George W. Bush and founder of the well-funded independent groups American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS, the governor describes Johnson's alleged role in coordinating Republican efforts in the recall elections. Bottom line, RJ helps keep in place a team that is wildly successful in Wisconsin, Walker wrote to Rove. We are running 9 recall elections, and it will be like running 9 congressional markets in every market in the state and Twin Cities. Johnson sent Walker a document saying that Wisconsin Club for Growth activities in the recall elections were overseen by Operative R.L. Johnson and Deborah Jordell, who coordinated spending through 12 different groups. Most spending by other groups were directly funded by grants from the club. This is according to the affidavit. Johnson stated, "We own Club for Growth." Now, what about that?
We've known this for a long time, though.
What's that?
I said we've known this for a long time. These guys are very coordinated. You know, Rove has his major group. The Koch brothers have theirs. They go into state after state, and you know they're coordinated because they run the same campaigns with national funding, and they have the same laws. You know, every time they come in, just like they did in North Carolina or in Mississippi or anywhere else, the same blueprint proposals are produced over and over and over, everywhere in the House and the Senate. And there's no possible way you can say they're not coordinated. It's ludicrous. They pretend that everything that they do on a local level is independent and different, but it's literally verbatim, copied word for word across the board. I mean, they're all coordinated.
Yeah, it is. It is so mind-boggling that they did not know how Obama did it. Everybody knows how Obama did it. They had people on the ground that went door to door. These people, these Republicans, don't want everybody to vote. So they're not going to even go door to door in their own house. They're not going to go door to door.
Well, cancer proved that.
That's absolutely correct.
They want to go from on high. They just want to not deal with people, not speak to people, not mingle with people, because people are, you know, poor and dirty and who wants to be around people? You know, what they want to do is stay in their castles and accumulate wealth and rule over you. That's what they do.
Yes. And it's just it's unbelievable. They admit this, and they will say it, and then they will say, when you come back to it with what you said, they said, "You're lying."
Yeah,
what,
we didn't say that.
Me or your lying eyes. I mean, that's it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. They will lie just as a principle. They will lie. It's a principle with them.
Well, the thing that's sad is, again, what I find most disturbing is that they are tearing down the fabric of America, our society. You know, they made fun of. I mean, completely made fun of. They've had a long-running joke now that Obama's the, quote-unquote, community organizer, as if that's a bad thing, right?
Yes.
I mean, they say that over and over, disparagingly, like that demotes him, that makes him a pathetic, you know, person. And it's like, that's what you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be organizing communities and helping communities and empowering communities.
Really? Is that what you're supposed to do? Is that
and that's what blows my mind
do?
about the Republicans when they claim to be conservative, American value, small town, you know, rah, 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 go America. But they tear down America. They tear down communities. They don't want communities organized. I just don't get it.
No. Yeah. Well, why? And they keep saying that, as you heard the man said, we win when less people vote. And that includes their own people. Because they can't let their own people know what's going on. Because their own people would not stand for it. It's as simple as that. Now, there's another document here that says other activists referenced in the documents allege that Walker aides Mary Shit, no, it's not true. It's Stitt and Kelly Reinflesch were involved in raising money for both the recall campaigns and the Wisconsin Club for Growth. That is a major, 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 major no-no. A fundraising consultant, Kate Dorker, also coordinated fundraising for a Walker campaign and the Wisconsin Club for Growth. Walker's chief of staff, Keith Gillies, is alleged to have been involved in conversation regarding coordination with independent groups in both the 2011 Senate recall election and Walker's 2012 recall campaign. Prosecutors also contend that the Walker campaign and the independent groups passively admit to the allegations by arguing that the coordination was not illegal because the group were engaged in issues advocacy, not electoral activity. So they have admitted they did it.
Yep.
But they say, no, we weren't, we were doing it as an advocacy group.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, the problem is, we're just going through this right now because, as I started to say before about the PAC, we have the Charlotte Mecklenburg chapter of the North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus caucus, and we have the Charlotte Mecklenburg chapter North Carolina Black Leadership PAC. And
right. You
can't have the same person working on the board in the same places. You can passively if they if they're not the vice chair or the chair. Now, the problem is if you're doing that, you see, this is one organization. So we can do that because the PAC is the same in both organizations as the caucus. But there, in Scott Walker's case, he has a separate group working with his campaign and his recall election. Now that's where the and his people are working on both of those areas. That is illegal.
Well, that's the thing. That's that smoking gun colonel that they were talking about when he was praising that guy, R.J. Johnson or whatever.
Right.
Saying that he was coordinating all nine campaigns and everything else, you know.
Right.
They're running it from centralized, and you cannot have coordination between these campaigns and their monies and their, you know.
Right.
And that's what they're doing.
We never spoke to Scott Walker about it. Well, yeah, but you can't prove that you didn't. And the problem is don't do it so you get in this trouble. So they are pushing the envelope. Now, they got a district.
Well, the thing is, they're not just pushing the envelope, Mike. They've been caught red-handed. I mean, come on. There's a difference between
and they're denying it. Now, reading
the appearance of something and the doing of it.
Well, it's reading on here. It says that prosecutors also. These are formerly documents portrayed by Wisconsin Club for Growth, Carl Rose organization, one of them, as the coordinated campaign's hub for operation. Now, the Club for Growth was the hub for his recall operation? Are you kidding me?
That's the only way he can survive, Mike. That was the only way in his state he was overwhelmed and underwater. And the only way he could survive is to bring in these outside billionaires with their national campaigns and let them run it and destroy his opponents. That's the only way. That's how he survived that recall. You know, going in, he was way under in that recall, and then he miraculously survived.
Well, it says here, as the coordinated campaigns hover operations, spending money on ads and acting as a dark money bank to dole out undisclosed funds to other groups to do the bidding of the Walker,
right.
Formerly a small player in Washington, the group pulled in more than $20 million in 2011 through 2012. It then distributed that money to other groups to push messages in the Senate and gubernatorial recall elections and key judicial races. Citizens
right.
for a Strong America received $6.64 million, all of its funds from the Wisconsin Club for Growth during this period, according to Internal Revenue forms obtained through CitizenAudit.org and GuideStar. The group then passed that money on to other groups active in the allegedly coordinated campaign. Wisconsin Family Action received $1.2 million. Wisconsin Right to Life received $400,000. United Sportsmen of Wisconsin received $245,000. And Safari Club International received $77,908. All this money had to come from somewhere. But since the group are registered as 501c4s, they are not required to disclose their donors. Okay? A search of the IRS documents, however, revealed that the original donations to Walker's Club for Growth came from a number of major Wisconsin business groups and conservative nonprofits. How about that?
Right. No, that's exactly what we're saying. They... You know, think about who the average voter. Think about the, you know, guy in the steel mill that lost his job because, you know, he came in and crushed all the unions. Or the teachers, when their union was crushed, you know, by Walker. These people don't have the funding or the wherewithal to do much more than to go out and pull a lever and vote. How can they possibly... overcome a tidal wave of $20 million. You're talking about pouring into that recall. $20 million.
You notice
it's
all
like a,
these different organizations.
It's a flood.
Here's the other thing. There was, in 2011, the Wisconsin Club for Group raised $1.6 million. And then, so then they go on. It's from the Wisconsin Homeowners Association. They got $900,000. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Issues Mobilization Council, they got $250,000. From Wisconsin Insurance Alliance, they got $140 million. From the Builders Industry Council, the next year the Wisconsin Insurance Alliance gave $100,000. The Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce Issued Mobilization got $165,000. Now, the Wisconsin Club of Growth also pulled $225 million from the Center of Protect Patent Rights, a dark money group operated by Walker supporters Charles and David, not ginger ale, but Coke, and $400,000 from the conservative Wellspring. Now, how many bets do we get 3 years from now? Those groups do not even exist. The Club for Growth set up a dummy company, put a dummy in charge of it, and gave that money to that dummy, only for that dummy to give it out back to
them. Of course they do, right? This is just like the same reason that we have, you know, 50,000 corporations that all have a P.O. box in the U.S. Virgin Islands or somewhere, so that they don't have to pay tax.
Why would they do that? You mean,
and
well,
that's
to have
why
a P.O.
I
box in Virgin Islands?
Yeah, and I love that one name you just brought up. That just cracks me up. So,
you mean David
election,
and
a governor's election, you know, funding is like the Office of Patent Protection or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it sounds so innocuous, you know.
The Office of Patent Protection. Yeah. Like we need. Oh, well, you know who needs that? That's the Washington Indians need that.
Yeah.
So watch the Indian football team. I'm not going to say the other thing.
These days
so
they need some help.
Yes.
You know what? So, I agree with the commentator I heard the other day that just said, why, speaking of these Redskins, why are they continuing on? He said he's going to appeal it again. He's lost for 12 years now in every court case. He's losing face nationally, and he's spending money. He's hemorrhaging money, I mean, to fight all these court cases. Just change the name, dude, and move on. I mean, you know, we changed the name here, the local team, back to the Hornets so that we could be local again. You know, so what? We'll just move on.
And that works for
And guess what? You get to resell all of the merchandise. you make billions. Just change the name.
Of course. You know what? When they stop making those things, you won't be able to find it because people are going to be buying hundreds of them to sell to other people.
Yep.
As silver it is. Now they're worth more than when they were selling them.
Yep.
An Indian in uniform will be, or a helmet, will be, I forget it, it'll be out of sight.
Yep.
So and you know what? How much publicity and how much good publicity he would get and say, you know, I've been thinking about this, and you're right. We need, hey, if Glenn Beck can do it, you mean he can't do it?
Well, of course. And I mean, come on. He's just being an idiot. And here's one for free, you know. If he wants to rebrand himself as some kind of a national thing and still have that cool cachet of the American Indian, all that kind of stuff, but still be purely American and neutral, man, go with the eagle or something that's, you know, a golden eagle or something that's a national symbol of America. I don't know.
Right.
Do something.
The Washington Eagles. Well, you see,
well, interfere with Philadelphia, but
Seattle,
I was thinking of something.
See, Seattle has a, well, that's a hawk on their helmet.
Well,
right?
The Seahawks, yeah. But, yeah, man, you got the Philadelphia Eagles already. I understand that. I'm just saying he can do something that sounds, you know, I mean, there's a million things you could do that are cool and patriotic and nice and, you know.
Hey, how about this? I know the Washington Chicken Hawks.
The Chicken Hawks. There you go.
Because none of those guys in Washington ever went and served this man's army or Marine.
Oh, but you know what? If you renamed the team the Chicken Hawks, you'd know all those skyboxes would be bought up by the Cheneys and the Bushes. Man, they would make money hand over fist.
Of course. I'm going to recommend that. The Washington Chicken Hawks, because you represent how strong every member of Congress and the Senate is when they went and put on that uniform and stood proud, stood post, as Colonel Nathan Jessup said, stood post.
Hey,
that's what you
need to do. And most important of all, no one can sell more bumper stickers than a Chicken Hawk.
Hey, you kidding me? As a matter
just
of fact,
just think of the profits rolling in.
Let's bring in Colonel Nathan Jessup here. You, Colonel.
You snotty little bastard.
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
The court will wait for an answer.
If Lieutenant Kendrick gave an order that Santiago wasn't to be touched, then why did he have to be transferred? Colonel, Lieutenant Kendrick ordered the code red, didn't he? Because that's what you told Lieutenant Kendrick to do.
Object!
And when it went bad, you cut these guys loose!
Your Honor, you have Marcus inside
a bony transport!
Your Honor,
you doctored the logbook!
Damn it, Captain!
Coerce the doctor!
Consider yourself in contempt!
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? You, Lieutenant Weinberg? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're goddamn right I did!
You're goddamn right I did. But you know what?
Hey, we can have code red on the field. Big D.
But you know what?
What?
He's a man who stood post. He's a man. Hey, we need to talk about the Chickahawks. Do we need to mention all these Chickahawks? Do we need to mention every one of them that has not served? And, hey, I don't have the paperwork here. You hinted about it last week. I'm sick and
we've talked about this for years.
Senator McCain. He's senile, he's old, and he's a liar. And he is not worth the damn uniform that he represented in this country. Because he pleaded and went on camera and talked bad about the United States. This man, Sergeant Bergdahl, never said a word on camera denouncing the United States. That man almost sunk the U.S. Forrestal. The USS Forrestal, he almost sunk because he's an asshole. He would have, if he wasn't, if he did, that man would have been in prison if that was you, me, or Joe Blow down the block.
But he has
the
a daddy.
The only reason why he wasn't, because his father was a head of the Naval Pacific Command.
Hey, it's all in who you know, Mike. It's all in who you know. It's not what you do, it's who you know. That's the Republican mantra.
Either way, this man is a complete, you know, I was willing to give him a break because he was tortured. And that's what, remember, that's what this man
said. See, that's the thing, Mike. That right there is the hypocrisy of it all, because we as a nation gave him a break. When we got him home, we embraced him. We let him recover. We let him then go into politics and serve a whole long career being the mouthpiece up on Capitol Hill and being an expert on all things military. But that was our pay. You know, our payback for saying, hey, you know what? You were in jail. You were beaten. You were whatever. I'm sorry for that. Here's your chance. So we gave him a chance. But then he turns around like an ass and accuses Bergdahl of everything under the sun and won't even give the man a chance. You know,
and doesn't know
what they did was they went over there. They got a guy that was in a freaking cage on camera being beaten and tortured and who was near death. And they said, well, he's fixing to die, so we'll do a trade. So they went over there and they traded some thugs that are sitting around moldering, you know, in Guantanamo. They got the guy home. Now, they can go and do the trials, and they can do any kind of investigation of Bergdahl they want to find out, you know, if he has a hangnail. But just give the guy his chance, like we gave McCain a chance. And that's the hypocrisy. They won't give the guy a chance.
No, why do you want to give the guy a chance? Why should you give the guy a chance? I mean, well, does he deserve a chance like McCain? Does he deserve a chance like McCain?
Well,
I mean,
speaking of second chances, here's another example of a second chance. Suppose your father was a very powerful politician and businessman, and then you were, you know, just a kind of a fuckstick, and you like to party a lot, and you go around, and you drink a lot, and you do coke, and you get arrested for it, and you got DUIs and everything else and all that. And then finally, eventually, Dad
person.
Says,
"Who is this person?
Hey,
who is this
you've got
person?
To grow Jeez. Up and do something with your life." And so then Dad gives you a company, which you bankrupt. And then Dad gives you a baseball team, which you sell off. But anyway, eventually, you get a job, and your dad helps you, and you become a politician. And then you go and get to be president of the United States, and the whole country let it go just because of your connections. And they gave you your chance to say, hey, you had an indiscriminate youth, and you did some bad things, but you're better now, so we'll give you your chance to prove your manhood. You know, that's a pretty fair deal in America. But there are some hypocrites that will then turn around and say, you can't do the same for anybody else. Only the privileged get away with everything.
Oh, yeah. So, and I guess working and growing up in a middle of the country family, not rich, with a single mother around, not the father, having to go to Hawaii because you got to help your mother and daddy help you out. I guess, and then going in and seeing that you're not doing such a good job in school, and your grandparents pull you up by your short hairs and you straighten up, and then you go and you go to Columbia, you graduate, you go to Harvard, you become the head of a Harvard Law Review, where you can write your ticket any job in the country, but you put your whole heart and soul in working with the low wealth people on the south side of Chicago, being a community organizer.
So what, you're going to like pay back your dues and help out the poor and middle class people like you were, and show people how to come up by your bootstraps, you know, give that lesson back?
But then you say, you know what? I need to do more. I probably can get things done faster if I run for office. You run for office, and you get the chance to become a senator. And then you get a chance a few years later to be president of the United States. Not once, but twice. Not voted on by illegal aliens. Not voted on. But you know what? Republicans voted for you. How about that? And
well,
I don't know
everybody voted for you because you not only won, you had an overwhelming majority win.
But that means some Republicans voted for you. And I don't normally say that word Republican, but the people who saw how much this would mean with this man being president, I tip my hat and call them Republicans. The other ones are the regressive scumbags. Simply that. Because
some people who, instead of seeing that as an American success story of a small town boy who overcome all these difficulties from losing the father to, you know, being impoverished and blah, 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 rising to the top levels of America, instead of being a success story and being the dream, the literal American dream come true, it is, he's black. Must be a terrorist Muslim implant.
Must be.
Can't be real.
But see,
tear him down.
Here's the problem. You had to be with the smartest criminal minds there ever was to say for this young girl from Kansas by the way, I was born in Kansas, Topeka, to marry an African student and have a child and plan to have this child become president of the United States.
Mm. That's like a 40-year master plot, you know?
You didn't do that here. You did that over in the jungles of Kenya.
Exactly. That's why I said this years ago during the election one time, but I mean it. If you go with the Republican theme that he's this illegal, illegitimate, fake birth certificate, Kenyan terrorist, subversive implant into American society, who's taken over the White House, you know. If you go with that plot, then the Kenyans and the Kenyan government and their Kenyan Secret Service must be the preeminent organization on the face of the earth. They have done what the Red Chinese and what the Kremlin and KGB couldn't do for 50 freaking years, you know? And it's amazing to me, amazing that they succeeded in conquering America from the depths of Kenya.
In a little hut with a witch doctor.
Yeah. I mean, so we should just go ahead and close Langley down and send all of our agents over there for training because apparently they can do it so much better and at one trillionth the cost.
That's right. Sticking pins in a damn doll in a witch doctor's hut and spitting in some muck on the floor and drawing something. Is that what they do? They spit and then they take a stick and draw it in the dirt.
Yeah, I think that's what they did in the 19th century, Mike. But okay, go ahead.
Don't
have any, you know, any stock racist images there. We don't want to have any caricatures. Go ahead with your story.
That's what they did. They drew it in the stick and they said, USA, 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 in the grand.
And then someone rattled the doll and said, and a corn husk fell out, and he said, Kansas, you know.
Right, Kansas, that's it. But you know what? They were saying, he's illegal. He can't be president. He wasn't born here. His mother was born here. S. Ted Cruz.
Yeah, we don't mention that, do we? Yeah.
So where does this wind up when the Republicans are saying hold on, now someone just texted me that I need to watch my Facebook page, so I have no idea what that means. Well, I must be getting threats. Check your Facebook. I just sent you an article, very important. Well, send it to my daggone email. Don't send it to Facebook. I go to Facebook once every 3 months. Anyway, so getting back to this, Ted Cruz, and I don't want this to get out. I want you, Thomas, to go very close. Make sure you're listening very close because I'm going to whisper this. I don't want this to get out because, you know, Ted Cruz was born in Canada by a Cuban father. Did you hear that? He was born in Cuba by a Cuban father. Now, what are we to make of that?
Cuban Canadian. I'm still waiting for the American part.
Yes, well, his mother, he says, was American. And he has now renounced his Canadian citizenship. Just listen to this.
Oh, yeah, I saw he just got around to that.
1970 in Calgary, Canada.
Questions have been popping
up about whether he is eligible to run for president because Cruz was born in Canada.
My mother was an American citizen, so under U.S. law, I was a U.S. citizen by birth.
I hear birther cries building on the left if you ever do run.
Senator Ted Cruz renounces his Canadian citizenship.
A spokeswoman for the Texas senator says the Tea Party favorite formally gave up his citizenship in mid-May.
This is not about diplomacy. This is about dignity.
I grew up in Houston. Houston's been my home ever since.
The Tea Party is anti-socialism and anti-immigration, so it makes sense that their hero is a Cuban from Canada.
Serving as a U.S. senator representing the state of Texas, I think it is only appropriate that I be only an American.
The president, speaking of which, the president, as you know, was dogged for years about his citizenship, and even after he released his birth certificate, people still questioned it. But Cruz doesn't receive this level of criticism, so do you think there's a double, triple, or quadruple standard going on here?
Well, the president's black, Michael. I don't know if you know that.
And wow.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it. Like, there's what happened, and look, it's a double standard, it's a triple standard, and it's a racist standard, and it's because Republicans set a strategy, and this is really serious, they set a strategy that Barack Obama was the other. He was a Muslim, he was a communist, and oh yeah, he's a Kenyan and he's not American. This was part of a Republican strategy. You see it actually in the Bo Bergdahl situation. Oh, he's negotiating with terrorists. It's been a Republican message all along, and it's sick.
Well, do you think, look, in light of Cantor stepping down, do you think that Ted Cruz is taking heart because, after all, he is the Tea Party personified? And what do you think about the prospects for immigration reform?
I mean, I'm not hopeful for immigration reform. I think it was a high bar before, and now I think every Republican is going to run scared. I think they were scared of their Tea Party base before. They came out a little bit. McConnell and other victories caused them to peek out of their shells, but now they're going to run scurrying back in.
Joining us right now is the chairperson of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, Ms. Robin Bradford.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, listeners. And yes, I'm an American citizen born in America.
Aisha, show me your papers.
My papers, my pedigree, everything is validated to validate me as an American citizen.
What do you mean pedigree? What do you mean pedigree? You a dog? What's the story, pedigree?
You definitely have to have a pedigree to validate your citizenship.
Pedigree?
She's purebred. Purebred.
I'm purebred. 100%.
Grade A American.
I have to look on mine because, hey, I'm in trouble. My grandparents are Macedonian Jews who married into Cherokee, who married into Dutch. And then the Bajans got in there somewhere. I don't know where, but they got in there somewhere. So I am not purebred. I guess
well,
I'm
they're
going to
deport you off the radio.
They're going to deport. Well, they got to find me because I'll be talking as I'm moving. All I need is a rest stop to charge the battery.
But see, that is the American success story, Mike, right there in a nutshell, that you can be one of everything. You know, that's why I always call myself a mutt. You know, it's just, that is American.
Okay. Is that why I like apple pie?
You just like apple pie because you're greedy.
Well, hey, I tell you what, when you have this apple pie, hey, you want some more.
Hey, there's nothing like liquid apple pie. Woo! Now, let me tell you, though, to brush back here onto Cruz for a second. It is interesting that this guy, whether or not, you know, he was born in another country and all that stuff, but it's so funny. He's made his whole career with this Tea Party, narrow-minded, anti-immigrant, hate, you know, speech career. And he just got around this May. This is 43 years into his life. He just got around to, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Here, let me renounce my citizenship with another country.
He did it in March, but he didn't want a lot of people. He didn't want to make a big fuss of it. No, because he didn't want people to know that he had another citizenship.
Well, you know what?
All right, go ahead. Go, you got a loud noise. Okay, go ahead. Robin?
Can you hear me? Can you
yeah,
hear
no,
me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so, you know, this is the whole Tea Party protocol. Point fingers, throw rocks, hide your hands, and never be truthful about who you truly are and what you represent. And hopefully more people will understand that these Tea Party extremists are a product of what they hate.
Did
you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that is absolutely true because that's what Hitler did. Hitler wasn't from Germany. He was from Bavaria. Where was it? Bavaria? He wasn't a German.
And
no,
he wasn't blonde and blue-eyed.
He was almost like
either.
A German, Mike. He was almost like that ideal. He was so blonde and tall and Nordic, you know?
Yes.
Right. With a mustache. Right.
Yeah, when he looked in the mirror, he was blonde. He was blue hair. I mean, blue-eyed. And he was stealth. And he was extremely tall, like a Viking.
Exactly. Exactly.
And handsome.
And just a little bitty small, you know, Austrian Jew or something. But hey, who's counting anyway?
Hey, listen.
Just
so
gotta have dreams,
is,
Mike. You gotta have dreams.
You gotta have dreams. Yeah, wait. If you don't have dreams, you have nothing, and you just curl up and die. I mean, simple as that. Now, tell us something, Robin. While Thomas is gonna ask you some questions about your candidacy running in a 92nd district. While I have to do something here for a moment. So, Thomas?
Nice handoff, Mike. Yeah, don't spill the apple pie. So, now that we've cruised on over to you, what would you like to tell us about what's going on this week in our neck of the woods?
Well, in our neck of the woods, I had sent Michael a... article from Political on Tom Tillis's newest statement that white people are the traditional Americans. So where does Cruz fall with that? I mean, he has a Hispanic last name. He's Canadian and Cuban. But that's the new thing out there. The traditional American is the white American. Everybody else.
You know, the height of irony is when that statement, when you send that story to us on the same week that the news is breaking that they had to cancel the trademark for the Redskins.
You know, we're in trouble. We're definitely in trouble if we continue to let these crazy people in and represent us and say that this is a country of just one type of person. That's amazing.
Well, it is. And one of the things that I've said, and not lightly either, this is we joke about a lot of stuff on here, but it is deadly serious. When you empower hatred and racism and misogyny and extremist religious viewpoints, you end up, there is no other option. When you start becoming extreme where there's only one view allowed, you only can end up down a dark path like the Taliban or a Nazi Germany where you start purifying your society. And that's what happens to these extremists. I mean, there is no, if you believe that, there is no other way, right? I mean,
exactly.
So there is no place for the other if you're, you know, your traditional society is white Baptist or something like that, you know, and it's like there's no place then for anyone else to be in that little picture. So that's the scary part. That's where the ideology becomes reality, and it always ends in bloodshed.
Exactly. And, you know, if you look at it, history is starting to repeat itself. They're looking at a cleansing. And we're going to be in a civil war soon because you have people with rights to carry guns in public places like parks, schools, you know, anywhere.
Target,
article.
Grocery stores.
Even the mall. You know, people in certain parts of the United States have their gun, their rifles on their back with their pocketbook. It's just crazy. And, you know, we're doing civil war, and if we continue to elect these extremists into office and keep voting against our own interests, yeah, it's going to be bloodshed through the streets.
Yeah.
And not just the ghettos.
Oh, no. No. It's going to be...
In rural areas. You know, it's just a scary time.
People forget, but let's just be clear about things. Domestic terrorism, for instance. The extremist groups now, even though we love to vilify and talk about things like, you know, everybody will run scurrying if you mention Black Panthers. But the reality is the greatest terror group ever is KKK. And the most successful terror attacks in American history have all been, except for September 11th, they've all been domestic, white, kind of usually religious extremist attacks, but we've got everything from, you know, blowing buildings out of the heartland in Kansas to blowing up the Olympics in Atlanta and blowing up doctors and nurses and shooting them dead, walking to their cars and stuff. I mean, it's very, very, very disturbing. But we always sweep that under the carpet, you know, and don't want to mention it. But then that's that heartland fear and hatred being promoted. And that's why those attacks have always come out of those groups. They didn't come from, you know, the ghetto or the immigrant camp somewhere. You know, you don't remember the great terror attacks of the Chinese laborers on the railroad because it didn't happen. Yeah.
Or the big revolt in World War II when they encamped the Japanese Americans. Wasn't, you know,
right,
some overthrow or anything like that. It's just, you know, America is a country that claims to be open to everybody, arms are open. And at the end of the day, it's just a select few extremists who try to dictate what America should look like. And America doesn't look like that. You know, other countries look at us and see how confused we are. You know, what are we actually doing to make sure that our interior is intact? You know, we're so worried about other countries, the exterior, but we need to worry about what's going on in our interior. And we're just voting the wrong people in, and we're not even looking at it for what it's worth. And that's what saddens me.
You know what saddens me is, and I keep saying this, and when I say it, I say, you know, it's wrong for you to say it. But the problem is, we're in a country where they say everybody has the right to vote. But and we tell our kids growing up, you know, you'll be president of the United States someday. Not everybody can't be president of the United States. Everybody can't be a mayor. Everybody can't be the governor. Everybody can't be the head of Microsoft. Everybody can't be Michael Jordan. And we have a okay. I'm getting a lot of background noise from you, Robin. A lot of background noise. Are you outside?
I had to go back outside because I was losing the signal, but I'll put it on mute.
Okay. Yeah. The thing is that we, as I said before, we are people that they say this, and I say it. I say it to Blake all the time. Hey, Blake, you know, and because you see, and he goes ballistic. He copies Michael Jackson. He's 5 years old, and he does his own performing here. And you say, oh, you'll be another Michael Jackson, or you're such an actor. That ain't happening. There's only one Michael Jackson. There's only one Bill Clinton. There's only one Obama. There's only one Lou Gehrig. There's only one Willie Mays. We'll be like them, but you can't be them. You may not even be like them.
And the story is that we go every day and tell our children that because we want to make them to feel good. We want them to think that they're just as good as everybody. We're not, maybe in some families you can't tell them you're going to be just like your daddy or you're going to be just like your grandfather because maybe they don't know who they are. So you pick somebody else in the sky. I remember growing up, baseball was my thing. Lived and breathed it. Lived and breathed it 24-7. My next-door neighbor's daughter was married to one of the Brooklyn Dodger pitchers. We used to go all the way. We used to walk there. It was a long walk. But sometimes we used to walk there and take the bus back or take the bus there, my father and I and my brother. And we always looked up to these guys to be the best hitter, the best base stealer, the best pitcher. But we didn't want to be like them. We wanted to be better than them. We imitated their stand at the plate. We imitated their stand. You know, it used to be a thing we used to call, I don't know if you ever played this when you were a kid. You had to play in the house. It's called sock baseball. What you do is you would roll up a bunch of socks together, and that would be a ball, and you would throw the ball in the house, and you'd hit it with a small baseball bat and pretend where it went was how many bases it was. And you'd say, okay, it'd be the Dodgers against the Giants or the Dodgers against the Yankees. And if I always wanted to be the Dodgers. I never wanted to be the Yankees or the Giants. And I would say, well, Junior Gilliam, bat first. And I would bat left-handed, even though I'm a right-handed. I would pretend I'm bat left-handed. So you wanted to imitate them. You'd imitate Jackie Robinson when he came up. You'd imitate, Duke Snider. You would imitate them. But we never said we wanted to be like them personally. Today, the kids want to be just like the singer, the rapper that they see. They want to dress like them. They want to have the car like them. No, I just wanted to hit like them. I didn't want to dress like them. I wanted to hit the ball like them. I wanted to pick the ball.
It's nice that you wanted to be like them, but you have a society of no heroes truly for these young people. They have nothing to aspire. Your kids don't even go outside and play with each other. They're so desensitized with video games and things of that nature. They don't really interact with each other. So if you don't interact with a human person, you're not going to want to be that person. You're not going to want to aspire to anything different. You're just going to be a drone. And that's what we're having. We have a society of drones that are being born, children that are desensitized. That's why, so easy for them to pick up a gun and shoot each other or want to see someone being shot because it emulates the video game that they're playing. But we got to do something different. We got to make sure that there's interaction. We got to read to our children. Make sure education is affordable or available for children. We're not doing a good job at that ourselves. I mean, we're creating all these charter schools in North Carolina. Why? To get a greater of the haves and the have-nots. All the kids who cannot get a good education will go to public schools, and all the ones that are educated will be in private or charter schools, and we'll be paying for it.
But that's all the business model, though. You're talking about a business model because that's the corporate dream is to create an entire society of worker drones that they can just control and sell things to and to privatize everything and have no public. There isn't any public trust of anything anymore. They don't believe in education. They don't believe in health care. They don't believe in government. They say none of it is valid. And that you should just hunker down at your home and get ready for work. That's your whole existence. And it's a shame because they are destroying. We used to lead the world in education. We were the first country that championed free education and mandatory education for every child. Used to, only the elite got educated. So we were all about an egalitarian society. Everybody has a chance. Everybody is equal, and everybody has the same rights. And we need to get back to that, because what's happening in this country is going toward you only have a right if you can purchase that right. And that right expires at midnight, and you have to repurchase it tomorrow.
Well, the right...
I agree. I totally agree.
I just wanted to jump on, just before we get rid of my growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and as a Dodger fan, we never wanted... My biggest role model was my grandfather, the Major. I mean, he was my biggest role model. I mean, he did everything. From World War One, private, worked with the doctors, and came up in a segregated military, become a Major. And we called him Major. We couldn't call him grandfather. My mother called him. My grandmother called him Major. He was my role model. I mean, even though I loved, to me, he was the greatest. I loved Duke Snyder. But he was not my role model. And what you were saying, Robin, you're absolutely correct. There are few role models, but you remember, you got to be careful when you say that. Because we have a lot of fans. That's what they were trying to say, what's his name, the Pillsbury Doughboy, Gingrich. He was trying to say, there's no role models in the black community. That's why they got to do that. We'll give them a job sweeping the floors. There's plenty of role models. But today, communication has overwhelmed what we see. And that's why Kennedy got elected. Because the visual stimulus with Nixon and the Nixon debate overwhelmed everything you said. Kennedy said absolutely nothing. Nixon hit everything out of the park. But no one saw that. If you listen to it on radio, you saw it. Problem is today, everything is visual first. And because they know other people are stupid as a whole, they play to that mentality. It's as simple as that. People are stupid as a whole. I'm sorry. That's what it is. They're stupid. Because if they weren't stupid, there would be no Fox television. There would be no Rush Limbaugh.
Well, yeah, I agree with you in this way, Mike. I agree with you in this way. People are at base, a lot of people are kind of simple and very easily distracted.
Stupid.
And they may not take advantage of everything that's offered. But there are immense opportunities. And what people have to get past is the being told part. You know, like you're saying, that there are no role models and being told that there are. I mean, one of the best role models in the black community right now is one of the best role models of all of America. We were just talking about him earlier. He is the embodiment of the American dream. That is the President of the United States, who came from an impoverished, broken home and rose to that level. That's an amazing story, and that should be a role model for every American child. Look at the success you can have if you try.
Speaking about role models, I never wanted to be a doctor, but hey, I wanted to be an astronaut, but I had bad eyes. So I failed the astronaut test because of bad eyes.
Bad eyes.
Hey, me too.
Dr. Grace Leem.
Hey.
Well,
and I know that's got my friend Robin Bradford on the line as well.
Yes,
and I am going to say we need to get Robin Bradford into our General Assembly in Raleigh and help fix the mess.
Robin needs to get there and fix that mess, because that mess spreading like wildfire. We need to go up there. We need to get somebody to put some daggone soul
so
on that garbage up there.
I truly appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice. But, you know, we need to make sure that who we have in there now, if they don't have any opposition, we need to hold their feet to the fire. We need to make sure, again, that we start clearing out the majority Republicans out of office, and any Democrat who falls prey to the Republican mantra. And we got to do it, and we have to do it this election and follow it back up in 2016, because this is horrifying on what's going on, the budget, education. You can be arrested if you talk about chemicals that are being used for fracking. What are we doing? What are we saying? North Carolina is a joke.
I want them to start fracking. Here's what I want them to do. I want them to start fracking in Joel Ford's backyard. That's where I want them to start fracking. Okay?
Start at Joel's house.
Well, you know, Joel Ford, he owns Joe Dirt, and Joe Dirt is a company that moves dirt, so when you dig in, you'll have dirt that needs to be removed. And Joe Ford isn't the only one from the Mecklenburg delegation that supported fraction. We're talking about Rodney Moore, you know. What is he thinking about? You know, I know he's from Wilmington.
Wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. You said thinking. Now, wait a minute. Thinking and Rodney Moore don't go together. You can't put that in the same sentence. Now, come on. Let's stop. Let's be real. Give me a break.
Lord.
Since we're talking about people who don't think, I mean.
So fracking and Rodney Moore's and Joel Ford's backyard, that's where I want them to start. And there's more. I want Joel Ford and Rodney Moore to be the first people to drink a glass of that fracking water.
Yes, I agree with that.
Wholeheartedly. I'm sure it wouldn't hurt Rodney Moore, but, you know, hey, no sense. No hurry. What can I say?
They need to hurt a rock.
You can't hurt a rock. You know what I mean?
They need to chase that fracking water with a little bit of that ash pond water.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Did you hear the other day? You know, the limited, broken, corrupt, half-assed environmental protection that we have in this state, even they came out and said that they had to clean up the ponds, and they've got that, you know, 3, 5, 10, 15-year window to do that, depending on how bad they are for all of these ponds. And then Duke promptly came out and said, there's no way, we can't do it. It takes too long. And they asked for 30 to 300 years.
That's all right. Yeah. I'll be around.
You know.
I'll be around.
Yeah.
You mean I can take my filter system out? I'll just take my filter system out in 300 years and drink the tap water. That's all right.
Exactly.
Well, like I said, I want those two to be the first people. And, you know, let me tell you something, and I'm going to sound like a daggum racist right here, okay? But I want them... I want the white legislators, those Republican white legislators, to go ahead and say to Rodney and say to Joel, go on, y'all, you drink that first glass of water. It won't harm you.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right. You be the first.
I want them to say that. Because those two don't realize that they are on a daggum plantation. They have just bowed to their white masters, and they have not taken a stand for the minorities, and I am furious with them. That's what they've done. So they might as well just bow and say, yes, Martha, I will drink that glass of water because you told me to.
Are you kidding me? You mean they haven't drank it yet?
Well, you're drawing the Kool-Aid, honey. They ain't drunk the fracking water yet.
They drank the Kool-Aid.
It's the fracking water they ain't drunk yet.
Okay, now I get it.
I think Robin probably doubled over in laughter right now. I don't know. But
Listen. Robin has her own Rodney Moore where she lives, who's in office right now.
Oh, good grief. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why
she does.
Every community has one.
Yes. But you see, the problem is, he's in office making it a headache for everybody who is in Huntersville. This man is outright racist.
Yeah, well, we've got one, too. His name is Larry Pittman. And fortunately, we have someone who's running against him, Earl Schechter. And Earl is a really sharp guy. I need to get him on your show. But he's a really sharp guy. We meet, and he is a strong, progressive Democrat. He's progressive. Wow, amazing. He's a liberal. He is a liberal. All right, and I know that's a bad word, I guess, but his ideas, well, look, anyone liberal compared to Larry Pittman, you know. Larry Pittman voted against the unemployment expansion. He voted against Medicaid expansion. He voted to cut food stamps, and he's voted against whatever. He didn't like the idea that we needed to test, even bother about checking or testing the water in Camp Lejeune. Why? It don't matter. But by the same token, he's up there jumping up and down talking about how much he supports the truth. But everything he does, he doesn't support the truth. He's against the truth.
You see, you missed our little saying by a real master of the military, Colonel Nathan Jessup, who asked, "You have not stood post. Have any of these chicken hawks stood post in the cold, the rain, to protect this country?" Like Mitt Romney said, I have done everything for my kids to help this country. That they've gone on tour with me. I mean,
right.
Come on. These people have, and this is the, I mean, there needs to be some place where we can bring back the draft. I don't know how it can be done, but I don't know why these people are so afraid of bringing back the draft. I don't understand. It would help the military-industrial complex if we brought back the draft.
Well, I think maybe a conscription rather than a draft. I think a conscription where you can, you know, it's 2 years that you give to your country, either in the Peace Corps or in the local, you know, Peace Corps either overseas or Peace Corps locally, or 2 years as a community organizer, volunteer, or
you want,
in the military. But a 2 year conscription, because you know what, that builds character. It really does.
Well, listen, 2 years conscription. Are you telling me, community, you want to produce another Barack Obama?
Dang, yeah.
What did you say? Community organizer.
Heck, yeah.
I don't know if I can go along.
I want to produce a whole bag of generation of them.
Oh, my God. Hey, Mike.
I'm a commie heathen.
Dr. Grace.
Yeah.
You've got to stop. So far, I've heard you're reversing years and years and years of work on the Republican side, because you have so far brought up progress, you brought back liberal, now you're talking about, I mean, next thing you know, your mouth's going to be something like AmeriCorps or something. I mean, have worked tirelessly to destroy all of these terms in America.
You can't
promote this stuff.
Oh, I know. What am I thinking?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think absolutely. They should have a service to America plan for every child, teach them the value of the service. It would help the country out. It would train kids, give them a valuable skill set. And you could also have actual distinct choices so that they could do things like, you know, work AmeriCorps here at home, or work in the Army overseas, or one thing that we used to have is the, you know, we had like the National Guard, we had Coast Guard, we had things like that you could serve here at home. But now, thanks to Bush, people are scared to death. I got people all the time say they don't want to go into it now because they're scared they're going to get deployed to Afghanistan or something. And that's wrong. They should have distinct levels of service, but everybody should serve, and you should have a choice.
Absolutely correct. And the problem is that they can't tell me that the people who are going into the military now was just as good as the group that I went in with in Vietnam. I don't believe it. The problem is, you know, let me tell you a little bit about something first. I was an F-4's Phantom Jets and 111. Radar. We control the fire control system, control the aircraft, fire the missiles, fire the guns. the radar, we had to learn how the synchronizer power supply of the which was the brains of the fire control system was built. We had to know the whole schematic, and if we didn't remember it, we had to take out the textbook and read the schematics. We're not talking about kids that graduate from college. Myself, matter of fact, they took me out 2 years. I was 2 years in college. A lot of the kids, most of them, were high school graduates. And we learned how to read technical manuals to fix something and troubleshoot something. Today, before I leave that, we had to go technically find the problem inside a radar system that operated the aircraft, essentially. We had to find it. And then when we found, we knew what the problem was, we ran tests. Then we had to go down to the precise level, pull out that whole box. It might have been, after running tests on it, might have been 75 pounds. Put that in, bring it into the mock-up, and then somebody else into the mock-up will troubleshoot down to the diode, replace that diode and put another one in, and then bring it back if we didn't have another unit already back in the aircraft. Today, the same technical person, he goes in, problem with the aircraft, not locking on target, presses the button, it goes, remove box A. They take out box A, bring it in, and put in another box. A monkey can do the job. So when they're telling me, you are not qualified, the people who in Vietnam weren't qualified, not as good as the soldiers we have today, that's bullshit. It's both. A monkey can do the job of these people today. I'm not saying this is just life. This is how it goes. This is how it goes now. But they can't tell me that the people back in the middle 60s or late 60s couldn't do the job that these people are doing now. That's complete nonsense.
Yeah.
And we had to go out there, troubleshoot a daggone aircraft, try to find a daggone diode on the aircraft while the daggone base was getting bombed. I mean, what, are you kidding me? It don't make no sense. And I got very upset with... Only time I got upset with General Walker, Wesley Walker. I was his campaign manager for all the volunteers in North Carolina. He said, told me to my face, no, we have the greatest group of men in our military back when we were in. He said that, and then a few months later, at another speech he was making. He said, well, you know, we have a small military today because our soldiers are a lot more on the ball and smarter. And I pulled him on that. I said, you know, this is absolute nonsense. He said, well, you know, the thing is we have to have these people out here thinking they're as good as they are. And that's going back to the same thing what I said before. When I was growing up, I wanted to be like Duke Snyder when I was hitting the ball. But I looked up to my grandfather. And it's just like today, you got these kids in baseball. They're not playing baseball. They're hitting a daggone ball with a metal bat so they can hit a home run. That's a false equivalent. If the kid can't hit a home run, he just can't get a home run. That don't mean he can't hit the ball good. And that's the problem why we have all these daggone kids who are playing ball now, and I call them kids now, because, well, they need to take steroids. Because just like my George and myself always said this, Barry Bonds would have been in the Hall of Fame if he never hit another home run. Because he's the only one that was in the 40-40 club, 40 home runs and 40 stolen bases 3 times in a row. No one has ever done that. But he wanted to be with the big boys. He had warning track power. But what happened when you started taking steroids, you now hit the ball 5 feet more, you now have home run power.
Right.
Everybody wants to be, you know, I got to be the very best in everything. But as soon as you start hitting home runs, his batting average went down. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Michael, okay. Well, here's what I'm going to say about our generation of military versus the current generation of military. Our generation was the best that our generation had to offer, okay?
That's right.
This generation is the best that this generation has to offer. That's all. That is what I want to say, because our generation went to war under those really not so good circumstances. But we went to
war.
You
think? You think?
And we did what our country asked of us. But and this generation also went to war under not so good circumstances. And they have done what their country has asked of them. 8, 9, 10 deployments. Okay?
Right.
So they have done and what this country has asked of them. So they are the greatest of this generation. So that's what I think we have to focus on. We have to focus on the fact that it's not a comparison. You cannot compare. It's apples and oranges. You cannot compare our generation and what we had to go through versus this generation and what they have to go through. Because our generation was not deployed more than once. You did your one tour, and that was it. You were done. Okay, but in the one tour, we saw so much carnage and so much violence and so much death and so much horror that was enough to last us a lifetime. I am not saying that this generation isn't seeing. I am sure this generation is seeing the carnage and destruction and death. But they're seeing it at a different level. Mainly because they don't have as much hand-to-hand as we had hand-to-hand, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Our generation saw hand-to-hand, right.
Yeah, but you see, the problem is, though, this generation wasn't supposed to be in the war. They told them, come on, join the Navy, join the Army. You have to join the Army. You join National Guard, and you'll get a chance to go to college. Hey, don't forget about that war. That was baloney. They fed them a lot of crap. But these guys were not expected to go.
Well, you know, they were fed that lie because honestly, and I can say this, honestly, no one believed we would ever go to war again after Vietnam. No one believed we would do it. But, of course, nobody's flipping counted on Bush and damn Dick Cheney either.
That's right. That's
and Wolfowitz and Paul and that mess, okay, that lot, and Billy Crystal. Right. No one ever thought that there would be a group of heinous monsters. I mean, they are monsters. No one ever thought there would be such a group of monsters as that. But not only did they exist, but they came into power.
Yeah. I mean, that is the difference. I have to say, from a populist point of view, we think that war, ever since World War II, war is to be waged only if it's for the greater good of humanity. You know?
Right.
Nowadays, I think that that's why you would expect there's never going to be another war, because we don't go in for territory. We don't go in to just screw with other people's, you know, regions.
Oil.
We go in supposedly.
Oil.
Well, no, that's
oil.
That's the truth. But we go in supposedly for, you know, democracy or to save populations from abuse. What has happened with these monsters coming into power is that we have a return to the war for profit. And war for profit is just going to endlessly wage war. And that's where you get into that, you know, 1984 scenario of a government lying to the people and telling union just propaganda all day long that war is peace and, you know, greed is good, and just take the gun and shut up and die, you know.
Right.
But that's not the way it's supposed to be, and it was an aberration.
Well, the aberration is Dick Cheney. The aberration is Dick Cheney.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. It's an aberration. I mean, it really is. It's not
aberration.
Supposed to be
and
that
I
way.
I honestly feel that Cheney and Rummy and Wolfowitz and all those neocon idiot asses, I should say, I believe that their theory is, honestly, to continue to dumb down America so that and make sure that there are no jobs here, that the jobs all get outsourced, so that you have no other avenue to pursue except the military.
Right.
No other avenue to pursue except to become cannon fodder. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And okay. It gins up it all plays into itself. If you got no work and no job and the Chinese man does, go shoot him. Take it. He's taking it from you. Go get it, you know. It's all that drive and that fear and that hatred of the other. It feeds itself. It's a machine. But that's what we need to end with. That's why I work so hard on voter education here. The entire Gulf War, the entirety of the Bush years could have simply been erased if 600 people would have showed up to vote.
Yep.
We would have had Al Gore presidency, and it never would have happened, ever. End of the story.
But Gore did win.
Oh, no, he did. But, however, he didn't win by enough, and they could still steal it. But the problem is, we need to get everybody out and everybody aware, and it won't ever happen again.
Gore won. In the recount, Gore won. The Supreme Court handed this to him. The Supreme Court handed the presidency.
Right. Which is why I said he needed to have more votes to have overcome it to begin with, and we wouldn't have even had the issue. But it's that simple. If any one state would have turned out, you know, even every state would have turned out just a fraction of a percent more people, it would have all been a non-issue, and we would never have had the longest-running wars in American history.
Yeah.
And
well,
we would never have wasted $6 trillion.
I will agree with you, and I will agree with you with this caveat, and that caveat is being the cynic that I am, the cynic that I am, I truly believe that that Bush, Cheney, the group had it planned, that there was no way. They stole the election, and they had it planned so that the election would be stolen no matter how many people came out to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. They would have squeezed those votes out of somewhere else. Yeah, they would have squeezed them votes from someplace else.
Yep.
That's right. Ohio.
Yep.
They would have squeezed them.
Getting back to the premise, though, of voter education, just like here in this state, if we would simply turn out, we have numbers, we would never be sitting here looking at the second 1860s. We would not have Duke Power sitting in the governor's mansion, and it would be a non-issue. We turned out for Obama, and then everybody went home, drank a beer, threw some confetti in the air, and let the next election just completely freaking roll over them and lost control of all the House and the Senate and everywhere else. I don't understand it, but people got to show up. And if people show up, this never happens because they can't steal everything.
Right. Well, there you're absolutely right. And that is why we encouraged everyone to come out, because we said, yes, we learned from our mistake, and our mistake was we were asleep at the wheel, and we honestly allowed Bush to steal in the 2000 election. But we learned from that, and we learned that if you come out in absolute huge numbers, they can't steal it.
Exactly my point. Even if they're going to steal it, they can only steal it when it's a few fractions of a percentage. But they can't steal, 70% overwhelming turnout. You know, you just can't do that. So that is why people have got to participate, and that's exactly why they drive down participation.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want everything to vote. But speaking about
speaking about driving down participation, Charles Jester, Jeter, he's like the court jester for North Carolina in the 92nd District. Where are you at, Robin, as far as getting your people in place to hit that button?
Well, we've been making phone calls. We've been getting people involved. I'm not only touching Democrats, but I'm talking to unaffiliates as well as Republicans with buyer's remorse. I don't want to put my plan out there totally, completely, so his team can try to get a handle on it and try to, you know, counteract what I'm doing. But people are reaching out to me from the other side of the aisle wanting to help and wanting to empower this race. I mean, I lost by 1.75% in 2012, which was a small margin. If we stopped the voting at early voting, I was up 53% at that point. He won his vote on Election Day in the high Republican precinct, as well as absentee ballots. So the thing that he has against him in this particular race more than ever is, one, his voting record. It's public knowledge, and I'm bringing that out. And the other thing is, he was listed as a voter in South Carolina. So, you know, if today, if we had to show an ID, where would he be voting? So I guess he has a little bit of Cruz on him as well. So he was, you know, I mean, if you're going to live by the sword, be prepared to dive on it when you're wrong. And Jeter, good, bad, and indifferent. He's trying to now do all these miraculous things, even in a black community. He asked for a moment of silence for in honoring the death of Maya Angelou. But if you ever ask him if he ever read one of her books, is he familiar with her poetry? You know, it was just another thing for him to say that he is not just for one climate of people, that he's for the whole district, which is not true. So I'm working really hard to make sure that people understand that he was elected by the skin of his teeth, and when he stated that he was a moderate Republican, which we all know, you'll see a uniform before you see that he lied, and he will continue to lie up until the last minute to hold that seat. He's part of the Tom Tillis Minions Club, and he's going to march that step and eventually want to be Speaker of the House based on the Tom Tillis model. So working really hard, need everyone's help within earshot. If you have any ideas, contact me at robinbradfordnc.com, and we can have a conversation.
Well, the thing Fantastic. I want to know is that, what has he done? What is his platform?
Well, I mean, his platform started off that he's a moderate.
He's a moderate. Well, see, that's the whole thing. That's his whole thing. I'm a moderate. But now, what is your platform that will help this Huntersville and the area surrounding that you'll be the representative of?
Well, again, my platform is the same thing it was 2 years ago, due to the fact that we haven't made any progress. We only have regressive government, and it was based on education, the environment, health care, and jobs. You know, these are things that the Republican majority have took our state back 100 years. We can't get federal dollars for Medicaid because they turned their back on it, and now what, we're in a major million-dollar deficit due to the fact that we've lost so much money, due to the fact that so many people still can't get affordable health care, due to the fact that, you know, that the regressive government, Republican government voted against it. We can't pay teachers. We can't value our educational system. And our environmental issues are going to hell in a handbag.
How's he explain the hole by not getting Medicare in the state? How's he explain that hole?
Well, I haven't heard him, per se, give his explanation, but his partner on the Senate side is Jeff Tartt. And Jeff Tartt's excuse was that the Medicaid with the federal dollar buy-in would take more money from our state than put money in, which makes no sense.
How does that work?
Sense.
I mean,
I don't know.
If someone is giving you money, how does it cost you money?
I can't explain Republican rhetoric. It baffles me. But for them, it sounds good, and people will listen to it, but now they see the proof is in the pudding. We are hurting really bad here in North Carolina. We're the laughing stock of the southern states and probably all of the United States. You know, but, goes back to education. We got to educate these people. Look, this is what the buy-in is. This is what you brought when you voted in 2012. If you want that repeat in 2014, then I hope you're prepared to move from where you live at because you can't afford to be here any longer. You know.
Oh, man. You mean I got to move? Holy cow.
Yes, you have to vote. Yes. Hillary's not on this ticket, but your life is on this ticket. So if you're voting for your life and you want to live, then you better vote in 2014.
You heard that, everybody.
Well, I mean,
that's
only if you want to live in 2014. You know, if you want to live in 1860, just keep hanging out.
What's wrong with that?
That's my new slogan. If you want to live in North Carolina and be able to educate your children, feed, clothe, and drink clean water, then you definitely need to vote in 2014 and every election. Otherwise, you're going to die on the side of the road.
Yeah, you know what? I really do think that people should just simplify. I think y'all should just have very, very simple messages because it is about it's we don't need to confuse the issue with policy debates, but you can just say, you know, if you want your kids to have an education, you want to be able to drink water, vote. I mean, it can't get simpler than that. And that's what they've done to the state.
What are two of your main points that you want to get across to everybody, Robin?
Well, I have three, which is the first one, vote and vote for me. The second one is making sure that we do right by our educators and our education system. And thirdly,
the third is vote for me. Oh, well, the environment.
Well, that's one and four. But, you know, the environment, we cannot continue to live and go down the road that we're going down by depleting our resources for personal gain. You know, the Koch brothers own the fracking companies, and some of the senators that voted for fracking own dirt removal companies. You know, when are we going to hold them accountable, and when are we going to stop? That's what I have to say.
Well, I think that is a very important ideal that this state has lost completely. And as we talked about before, as Dr. Grace mentioned, we're two in the hole with the two hole in the heads that we have now up there. So we need to catch up and at least counteract one of those hole in the heads that's in the Democratic Party who voted that. You know, and I was told, well, you know, we need fracking because it's going to add jobs. Add jobs for what? For 10 minutes?
It's less than 300 jobs that is going to be produced from this fracking. And if you're from Mecklenburg County and part of the delegation and supported it, there's no jobs coming to Mecklenburg unless you're willing to relocate to where the jobs are at or unless you work for the company that's going to be removing the dirt.
Right.
There's no jobs. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, this is a Ponzi scheme. You know, look at it at that. I come from the financial world. This is a Ponzi scheme that we're playing on people. And we need to stop. We need to expose the people who are handling our values, our state. We have to hold them accountable. And, yes, I'm chair of the Mecklenburg Democratic Party, and I'm a proud Democrat. But if there's Democrats who are making a mockery of what's right, then how much of a Democrat are you truly? And why should we continue to put you back in office? Just in the name of Democrat? No.
Exactly.
We got to stop that.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Absolutely
Bob,
correct.
Bob and Brett, Bob just absolutely hit the nail on the head. That is exactly, she is exactly correct. Do not be a Democrat in name only. If you are going to be a Democrat, then you need to espouse a Democratic platform, and you need to really think about the people first, not your own dad-blame pocketbook. Are you listening, Joel Ford? Not your own dad-blame pocketbook, okay? And I'm honest to goodness, and I am on a campaign now. I'm furious. I'm absolutely furious. Because Joel Ford, and you know, do not piss off the little Chinese girl, right? You know, Joel Ford and Rodney Moore, both of them, absolutely, I am furious with them, furious. Because all they did was simply parrot and repeat the Republican talking point in order to get this to pass, when they voted for this bill. They could have voted against it and it would still have passed. They could have voted against it and it still would have daggone passed.
They didn't have to vote at all. They could have took that day off because the majority already had a hook, line, and sinker.
Exactly.
So there was no reason to tie. There was no reason to tie yourself to the bill. You could have still had your dealings on the back end, whatever they may be. And I'm only speculating. I don't know. But you could have had that on the back end, and still fracking would have passed. It would have passed.
Yeah, but. Y'all are thinking about it in an integrity way. This is all business, and they were currying favors. You know, they need that business, so they had to parrot their master's, you know, words.
This is like the Virginia Democrat who resigned so that he could be in nomination for the Department of Transportation position.
Hand the state over to the Republicans. Yes, it is. And
it is
the thing is,
play.
This is one of the things that makes me mad. I know that it's become a popular mantra, and not to hammer the Clintons, but they were a large part of it. The Democrats have picked up this working mantra to fight back against the Republicans, which I understand in principle. You know, you want to be the party of jobs and the party of the real fiscal responsibility and blah, blah, blah. Okay. We get it. Okay. I'm all for it. But it can't be all about money, because that reduces arguments down, just like the fracking argument, to say, oh, it will create jobs. Well, you know, yeah, the people who light the dynamite to blow up the rock get the job. But then everybody else, including that guy, has to leave afterwards, because you can't live in a lethally polluted place where you can't even drink the water. So there'll be jobs for 5 minutes, but in the long term, there'll be no jobs. And you've got to start thinking progressively. Yeah, so, you know, a real job-creating atmosphere is always progressive. You're looking for the next thing. You're wanting to invest in something. You're like, let's create a research triangle here and bring advanced technologies. Let's create something in genetics research here. Let's create something with Hollywood. Bring them over here and create a new cultural boom. You know, let's create things. Let's create the next wave. Let's become the solar panel producer of the whole country. You know, let's think ahead for the next wave of the economy, not for what we can do by blowing up your backyard for 5 minutes and get $50 for it. You know, that's the difference.
Yeah.
Short-term, long-term.
Well, right, and the long-term part of it has to be and must be positions and jobs that are created that will actually benefit everyone in the long run, not just for the current 5 minutes, as you said.
Which is the whole point of a sustainable economy versus an extractive economy.
Yep.
You're absolutely right. But I have a question for everybody here. You know, what does it mean to be bipartisan when there's a super majority? Why do Democrats feel that they need to be bipartisan in a super majority climate?
They don't. Why should they? They don't. Well, if what is being offered by the other side is so heinous and egregious, then no, why should you? If they're offering some kind of solution that is actually palatable and that has some merit to it, then yes, that's what you call true bipartisanship, and that's what you call really both sides working for the benefit of the country. Unfortunately, the Republicans have gone off the deep end, and I have never seen a party so intent on having America fail just so they can prove a point. Never.
So when you talk to some of our General Assembly Democrats, and they said, well, you know, you have to be bipartisan. And I'm really stumped with that, because you don't have a leg to stand on, nor a pot to piss in, or a window to throw it out. But you want to be bipartisan?
Well,
you
want to
support an initiative? There's no reason for you to be bipartisan. You know, you go up there, you do your job, and you ask to be recognized and speak. If you're in opposition, at least it goes on public record what you said in opposition to stand by your vote. But, you know, but when you talk to some of these Democrats, well, I voted for that because, you know, we need bipartisanship. Now, there's no need for it because you don't even have the vote to support anything bipartisan. So people who are listening, guess what? When your representative, if your Democrat tells you, and they're a Democrat, well, we need bipartisanship. Bipartisanship doesn't mean a 90%, 10% supermajority. No, bipartisanship is closer to the middle of the road, 50%, even as high as 65%, you can kind of work a deal. But if you are outweighed by triple digits in some cases, why are you resting on, I need to be bipartisan? Please, people, don't get fooled by that word, bipartisanship.
There's a kinder way of saying, suck it.
That bipartisan in this day and age means kissing someone's butt. That's what it means, and I'm going to call it like it is. Okay?
It's not kissing, it's eating. You're eating the whole butt. You're not leaving a piece behind. You're eating
one little piece behind. That's right. That's exactly right.
Robin,
I don't understand why you got to do this. I'm right there with Robin. I cannot for the life of me.
Well, it is simply craven. That's all it is. It's people who are desperate, and they want their power, and they want to be part of the majority, so they'll do anything. And that's all it is.
But what about Mecklenburg County? With the county commissioners, instead of pulling the trigger and supporting teachers, now they want to put the referendum bonds on the ballot. Well, what's that?
Of course we would vote for it, but they missed the whole big picture. And the big picture is that the teachers got the short end of the stick and the big business got the big end.
Of course.
And
they missed that.
And it protects my seat since I'm up for re-election. If the bond is not supported by the voter, then my hands are washed because the voters didn't want to support it. And this is a midterm election.
My gosh, that is so stupid. Because what they should have put out there for a referendum is to put the referendum on tax cuts for the rich at the expense of the teachers. That's the referendum they should have put up there. That's what they should have put up on the ballot.
It's going to be on the November ballot for Mecklenburg County.
I've got an idea. Why don't we put forward a constitutional amendment like banning gays or something? That'd be fantastic. Why don't we put that in there?
That'll drive up
votes.
There you go.
Of course. But it just saddens me that we have elected officials who are becoming Republican-like to keep their seats.
Yeah.
Totally amazes me.
Yep. Well, it's terrible, and it needs to stop. But the only way it's going to stop, short of, you know, revolution, the only way it'll stop is at the ballot box, and people simply have to show up and vote. All of this can be undone, but you have to show up.
That's our revolution.
And we got to stop being sensitized also. People understand you have a vested interest. I don't care what color you are, what nationality you derived from, or where you live at. You know, if you want this to be the America that you grew up believing it to be, then you have to do your part, too. And you know, if you want to save lives abroad with our military, then you got to make sure that they have something to come home to. And yep. At this rate, they have nothing to come home to. Their wives, their spouses, and their children are left in squalor due to the fact that we're not doing our job here locally to do what we need to do to get the crap out and put some new blood in there.
Yep. You know that. Listen. I'm missing all of that.
It is as a cold glass of water, Mom, and say, "Sorry, honey, there's no water. There's no clean water for you to drink.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to come home."
Yeah.
That's just pathetic. It really is. It should be so simple.
It is simple. It's so simple as the nose on your face. But you know what? We don't look in the mirror enough to see what we need to see. We look in the mirror to see what other people, what you want other people to see. We're not.
What we want other people to see.
What's right.
Exactly. Well, we've got a lot of things to do. You know, a friend of mine posted some old pictures from Vietnam on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And old pictures of me. And I thought to myself, I looked at my, I was like, gosh, we were so young. We were so full of energy. We felt like we could change the world. Remember that, Michael? We felt we could change the world. And by gosh, we did. We did change the world. But then you know what happened? We changed the world because Nixon resigned. We changed the world because people woke up and realized, oh, my gosh, there's so much bad stuff happening. We need to wake up and smell the coffee. And we did that. We changed the world. But we rested on our laurels. We thought, okay, we've done it. We've changed the world. And now we can go back to living our lives like we thought we could, so we got busy with growing up and having kids and, you know, getting educated and everything like that. And we kind of fell asleep. And they took advantage of us again.
Yeah, it's very analogous. Well, it's very analogous to what happened after the Obama election. Everybody was happy and everybody thought, change is here. Oh, our hopeful future has arrived. We don't have to do any more work. But they stole it back from us. And the same thing happened there. You had a moment, and then you went, you know, job accomplished. Yay, we're done. And whoops, they took it back from you. Because every time you turn your eyes, they're going to steal from you.
Right, which is why my key phrase, my key word right now is vigilance. We have to be vigilant from this point on. I tell my daughter that all the time.
Not to prove my complete nerddom, as if you know it wasn't obvious. But you know, there's this very popular villain monster on Doctor Who that is these weeping angels, and it's this alien race that comes and will kill you. But whenever you look at them, they freeze into statues. And when you turn your gaze away, they come at you. And you can never not look at them. You have to be hypervigilant or they will come and kill you. And it's a very horrifying, image. But this is what they do. If you are not always paying attention, they steal your life away.
As Robin said, if we want the life that we believe that we've chosen, then we've got to vote, and we've got to stay ever vigilant, and we've got to put our money where our mouths are. You know, that's it. Got to do it. Gotta do it. You can't be filled with rhetoric. It's simply yakety-yakety. So, Robin Bradford, the General Assembly. Hello.
Thank you again. Thank you so much. And donations can be made at that same website. And, you know, it's a shame that we have to raise so much money to win, plus get voters to get out, you know.
Yeah.
It's just scary. But, you know, I plan on winning this time. I plan on winning before. I can't do it without votes from constituents in District 92 and people spreading the word. And that's what we need to do. You can hold me accountable. If I don't do what I say I'm going to do, then guess what? I'm not going to run for re-election. It's a waste of my time and an embarrassment to my character to do so. So.
You mean you don't want to be the next Eric Cantor? You don't want to just hang out and ignore your constituency?
No, that's not why I'm running. You know, it's easier to stay home and be a, what is that, an armchair quarterback. You know, I can do that. But and complain about everything and run for chair of the county party and still complain about everything. But I want to make sure that I'm leaving a legacy for the future generation, talking about hope in 2008, again in 2012, talking about moving forward, and we're on the fast track to backwards. I can't live like that. I have a 23-year-old, and we adopted our younger daughter who is 9 years old. What kind of hope am I giving her and my older daughter? Nothing. So
exactly.
I have to put my money where my mouth is and run for office and do what I need to do and get elected and try to make that change. Try to galvanize enough people to make sure that they see, whether they're Democrat or Republic or in between, what we're doing here in North Carolina is wrong, and we can't continue to be wrong.
Exactly. I agree 100%. I've got three
wrong
young children here, and it horrifies me every day. I mean, they've been closing libraries, closing schools, firing teachers, and I agree with you 100%. I cannot allow my children to grow up in this environment. It's not right. It just is not right.
No, exactly, Tom.
All right, so where can people get a hold of you, Robin, if they want to help your campaign?
If you want to help the campaign for What's Right, Common Sense Leadership, Robin Bradford NC, all one word, .com. RobinBradfordNC.com. Let's have a conversation. If you want me to come and talk to a group of people, let's have a conversation. Because what I see might need to be even broadened out more because I don't live in your neighborhood. We might live in the same district, but I don't live in your neighborhood. So let's have a conversation. And even if you're on the other side, let's still have a conversation of what the current representative is doing and how you feel about that.
And why they're absolutely wrong.
I just want to also, on another note, just, Robert, let you know that one of your big supporters, even though he can't vote for you, David Adams is in the hospital, and I'll tell you hello. And that he's going to be have an operation tomorrow, and that he wishes you well.
Well, God bless you, David, and, you know, be positive about what's going on with your body and understand that you're already healed. And I hate to sound like an evangelist, but I believe that way. So the more positive thoughts, the more prayers, the good prayers that we have for each other, the better he will be. So. God bless you.
I think you'll love that. And well, I have you here. John Stewart is a funny man. But he wanted to know, what the fracking are we going back to Iraq? I want you to listen to what he had to say.
But first, remember that country we invaded a little while back that was no that was too far back. That's that was a shadow coup. That wasn't an invasion. That was a police action. That was a giant step for all mankind. That's I'm talking about Iraq.
A rock. That's the rock. That's... Thank you. A rock. Remember? We invaded it because 9/11 and weapons. And then we had to pretend that we were really trying to bring democracy and stability to the Middle East. I mean, I don't remember what happened over there, but I guess history will be the judge.
In Iraq, where American troops left more than 2 years ago, insurgents are making a comeback this morning. The country's second largest city, Mosul, is under control of militants.
Whoa, slow down, Judge History. I can't believe the militants took Mosul. 2 million people. Well, those rebels are going to have their hands full trying to corral that town.
To Crete, that's the Dom hometown, gone. The string miscontrol that.
Oh, to Crete, too? They took to Crete? To Crete and Mosul. The twin cities, as
no one there calls them.
Although, now I think the militants will probably consolidate their gains, fortify their position, research schools for their kids, maybe.
The militants are advancing towards Iraq's capital of Baghdad.
What the f*** is going on over there? How are the militants moving so quickly? Is it... But... Easy pass. Oh, no. And we brought that there. So, oh, cheer for the militants. I didn't think we'd have to do this anymore. Well,
looks like we're going to have to return to our old coverage. Let me just get this out there. Let me just get...
Mesopotamia coverage is back. So who are these militant overachievers?
The militants belong to the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS.
Their ambition to create a Muslim caliphate, a single Islamic state.
Their leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi,
44 years old and was a highly regarded professor, has a master's degree and PhD in Islamic studies from the University of Baghdad.
Ooh, did you hear that, ladies? He's a doctor. A brutal doctor. Guess we should have been tipped off by his PhD dissertation. So technically, he's Dr. al-Baghdadi. What else do we know about this guy?
Some analysts call him the world's most powerful jihadi leader. He's also said to be more violent and more anti-American than Osama bin Laden ever was.
Okay. Okay. More violent? Fine. But really, more anti-American than bin Laden? Come on. Guys at the top of the anti-American. So you're telling me if Baghdadi and bin Laden are having an argument about America, bin Laden is the one going, no, look, I hate them too. I'm just saying. Nobody does a theme park like the Americans. There's a reason it's not called the Great Afghani Scream Machine. Well, either way, it doesn't matter. Because newsflash, motherfuckers. You may have an international terrorist militia headed by a real-life supervillain, but Iraq's got something even better.
The United States spent $17 billion to help train and equip Iraqi security forces.
America! Yeah! That's right! The America-trained, America-funded, badass, butt-kicking Iraqi security forces. Looks like the ISIS militants are about to enter the Hurt Locker.
Iraqi forces that were trained by the U.S., they just simply ran.
Ripping off their uniforms, leaving them in the streets, and abandoning their posts, weapons, and vehicles.
Did I say Hurt Locker? I meant the locker where you keep the uniforms and other stuff you're discarding while you're running away. By the way, what happened to all the stuff we probably left over there?
The terrorist group overran a military base. Americans supplied Humvees, weapons, and ammunition, now in their hands.
Ha! Joke's on you! We had failed to properly up-armor many of those vehicles. Gotcha.
Is there any good news to report here?
The Iraqi government is now reaching out for help, asking the U.S. military to fly combat missions, drones, provide intelligence to reverse this advance from this group.
Yes! We did it! We finally got it so that Iraq will now greet us as liberators. Way to go, everybody! Senior Iraq war correspondent Jason Jones is in Baghdad now. Jason Jones! Jason, what's the latest?
John, the tactical situation is deteriorating here fast.
Jason, I'm sorry, the shirt, the Hawaiian shirt you're having to drink there. You're a war correspondent.
Yeah, and yesterday I wasn't a war correspondent, John. I was just another guy enjoying his vacation in Iraq's vibrant utopian democracy. Copyright 2003, US of A.
Uh-huh.
It had everything here, John. Sun, sand, more sand.
Yes.
But I guess the Iraqs decided democracy is not their thing.
Well, what is the Iraqi government doing?
Well, there are a few options. They're stripping off their uniforms and running. That's one. But there has been some talk, some lower-level parliamentary talk,
mm-hmm.
of running faster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With less clothes.
I understand. But the militants obviously have trucks and guns, mostly American trucks and guns, so the running probably not going to work.
Well, there is one other option, John. Mm-hmm. There's an old Iraqi saying.
Yeah.
The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun
yeah.
is a truly horrible guy with a gun.
Really? You're talking about returning an oppressive, strong-armed dictator to power.
Exactly. Or as they call it here in Iraq, Iraq classic.
Really? Well, let me answer your question, though. Where are you going to find a dictator? What are you... What are you doing there? What are you...
You'll see. Just continue. But
Jason, this is... Whoa. Jason... That popped all the way back here to New York.
That's
that
right.
was weird. That you took off your shirt in Baghdad, and I almost took a button in the eye back here in New York. That was very interesting.
Powerful pop, John.
It was a powerful pop. This is the stupidest idea you've ever... Holy Jason!
Right?
Wow! Wow!
Yeah. The stash really pulls the whole thing together.
Boy, you're not kidding.
Yeah, that and the huge gun collection.
Wow. Jason, I really don't think the Iraqi people are going to fall for this. It's not...
Hey, everyone! I'm back! I'm here to save you.
All right.
And then imprison and torture you.
All right. Saddam Hussein is back, everybody. We'll be right back after this. All right.
Now, this man really put the nail in the coffin of what the hell are we going back there for? What the heck are we going back there for? Well, if you want to know what we're going back there for, just listen.
Oh, we didn't have my mic on. So just listen to the it was sitting on top of my head. Just listen to the greatest people who have ever walked this planet. Tell us why we are going back to Iraq. Because the last time we were there, they greeted us.
My belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
Yes. Because we are going to be greeted as liberated, and ask the person who has only lived 4 lifetime hearts, Dick, Tricky Dick, and Liz. Listen what they had to say about going back to Iraq.
Ed Henry, thank you. Well, this morning, the man who helped lead us into Iraq in the first place penned a scathing op-ed in the Wall Street Journal questioning President Obama's leadership, accusing him of abandoning Iraq and snatching defeat from the jaws of victory there. This led to predictable outrage from many on the left. Joining me now, former Vice President Dick Cheney and his daughter, Liz Cheney, who co-wrote that op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Thank you both so much for being here. Mr. Vice President, let me start with this. This is from one item in the Washington Post posted by Paul Waldman today. Quote, "There is not a single person in America who has been more wrong and more shamelessly dishonest on the topic of Iraq than Dick Cheney. And now as the cascade of misery and death and chaos he did so much to unleash rages anew, Mr. Cheney has the unadulterated gall to come before the country and tell us that it's all someone else's fault. The suggestion then is that you caused this mess, Mr. Vice President. What say you?
Well, obviously, I disagree. I think we went into Iraq for very good reasons. I think when we left office, we had a situation in Iraq that was very positive. We made major progress as a result of the decision President Bush made to go with a surge in 07 and 08. There had been a dramatic reduction in violence in the country. They were prepared for negotiations that would lead to a stay-behind force of American trainers, technical people, intelligence, logistics capability, so that the Iraqi armed forces would be able to defend their own territory. What happened was that Barack Obama came to office, and instead of negotiating a stay-behind agreement, he basically walked away from it. Not only did the combat forces leave, but all of the other forces left as well. Our generals had recommended a level of 20,000 to stay behind. The White House said no and cut it ultimately to 3,000, and frankly, that was inadequate to do the job. No agreement was ever reached. But the result was an Iraqi military that was unable to stand up to the terrorists when the ISIS came in from Syria a few days ago.
In your op-ed, you write as follows: rarely has a U.S. president been so wrong about so much at the expense of so many. But time and time again, history has proven that you got it wrong as well in Iraq, sir. You said there was no doubt Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. You said we would be greeted as liberators. You said the Iraq insurgency was in the last throes back in 2005. And you said that after our intervention, extremists would have to, quote, rethink their strategy of jihad. Now, with almost $1 trillion spent there, with 4,500 American lives lost there, what do you say to those who say you were so wrong about so much at the expense of so many?
No, I just fundamentally disagree, Megan. You've got to go back and look at the track record. We inherited a situation where there was no doubt in anybody's mind about the extent of Saddam's involvement in weapons of mass destruction. We had a situation where if we, after 9/11, we were concerned about a follow-on attack that would involve not just airline tickets and box cutters as the weapons, but rather something far deadlier, perhaps even a nuclear weapon. Saddam Hussein had a track record that nearly everybody agreed to. We had an overwhelming vote of approval from the Congress, more votes for the action than we'd had in Desert Storm some 10 years before. Bill Clinton and Nancy Pelosi, numerous others, spoke to the difficulties of the intelligence that all of us saw with respect to the threat that Saddam Hussein represented. It would have been irresponsible for us not to act. We did do the right thing, and I think the troops performed magnificently, and now we're in a situation where what Liz and I posted in our op-ed this morning is it's not just Iraq, but it's a whole pattern of behavior over the last 6 years that has refused to recognize that there is a war on terror, that we've got to move very aggressively to be able to deal with that, and this administration has repeatedly demonstrated that they don't believe it. Barack Obama has stated repeatedly the terrorist threat's gone. We got bin Laden. That's clearly not the case. That's not the truth. And in fact, we have a situation tonight where terrorism is potentially in charge of a larger part of the Middle East than ever before in our history.
You mentioned that the status of forces agreement, and President Obama has taken a lot of heat for not negotiating that with Maliki. However, critics point out that it was President Bush who did sign the deal that said we'd get all U.S. forces out of there by the end of 2011.
With a status forces agreement for a stay-behind force.
And when the president, our current president, sought to renegotiate that, al-Maliki didn't want it. That's what the president's defenders say, that he tried, he wanted to keep some stay-behind forces that would protect the gains our troops had made, but Maliki made it too tough.
No, that's not quite accurate, Megan. What happened was our generals recommended a stay-behind force of from 14 to 18,000. The White House rejected it. So the military came back with a recommendation of 10,000. The White House rejected it. They took it all the way down to 3,000. I think by the time they got to that level, the Iraqis looked at it and believed that we weren't serious, that Obama was absolutely committed to completely withdraw from Iraq, and they were unable to come to an agreement, but I think in part because the Iraqis didn't think he really wanted one, and he certainly didn't push it. We have agreements like that with 40 nations around the world. They should have been able to come to an agreement with the Iraqis, and I think that failure to do so is what has precipitated the current crisis.
You know, there's no
but
question
it's the culmination that... of a policy that's gone on for 6 years now, and he has not been willing to step forward and have the United States play a significant role in the world.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because despite the fact that the Iraq war was so controversial and some of the items, in part because of the things we've been discussing, when the president came into office, President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden came into office, the vice president was celebratory about the situation in Iraq and said that it may be one of their greatest successes. That's how he described it in 2010, that Iraq could be one of the Obama administration's greatest successes, he predicted. Do you think, let me give this one to you, Liz, do you think that that is a game changer in terms of the political way this is playing out from all the people who want to blame the Cheneys and the Bushes?
Well, I think that what it demonstrates, Megan, is that there was agreement, there was unanimity when the president came into office that, in fact, Iraq was in a stable situation, that, in fact, the surge had been successful. President Obama also said, as a candidate in 2008, that the surge succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. So there's no question but that the situation was one where the president had a job, which was to negotiate a stay-behind agreement, to leave enough forces there so that we could provide the kind of intelligence the Iraqis needed, the kind of training they needed, the kind of assistance and support and planning that they needed to be able to maintain the gains that had been so hard won by American forces.
He wanted,
the president didn't do that.
He wanted
now,
out.
Yeah, and there's no surprise, frankly, that there are a lot of people now who would like to say, well, let's blame, you know, the Bush-Cheney administration for what happened. That's a pretty routine thing we hear from this administration. But your questions tonight, Megan, in large part demonstrate why we've decided to form this organization, the Alliance for a Strong America, because there's a lot out there that's being said, frankly, that is not true from this administration about the threat facing our country today. And we feel it's very important that people understand the threat that we face.
And I want to give you a chance to respond to that. I mean, obviously, these are questions that are out there and that are being raised, and who better to respond to them than you? And I know that now you formed this group, and your group wants to reverse President Obama's policies, which I know you, Mr. Vice President, believe have endangered America's security. First, tell us why you think that. And tell us how you think, you know, this nonprofit group can do anything to stop a president.
Well, for one thing, Megan, we think it's an opportunity to get out and talk about these issues in a very objective fashion, to stand up and point out the flaws in the administration's current effort. Liz and I had the opportunity back in March to make a swing through the Middle East and talk to people I've been dealing with for 25 years since Desert Storm. And to a person, whether we're in Israel or in Egypt or the peninsula of Arab states, to a person, they now doubt the willingness of the Americans to come to their assistance. They don't trust us anymore. They were all very fearful that this president will not keep his word. And for years, they've been our partners and our allies, and now they believe basically that they can no longer count on that. They see the administration, they think, is supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, the group from which Al-Qaeda and Egyptian Islamic Jihad and so many others were spinoffs. And tonight, if you look at the possibility, for example, that Barack Obama wants to work with the Iranians to get involved in Iraq, that's something that creates consternation and fear among all of our friends and allies in that part of the world who think Iran is as big an enemy as Al-Qaeda.
Do you think that President Obama is dangerous?
Yes, I'll answer that one, Megan. I think there's no question. I think that he is unique in terms of a president who is sitting in the Oval Office who has made very clear that his desire is to weaken the nation. And whether you say it's his intent, whether it's naivete, you can now look at the results of the policy the last 6.5 years. And you've got, you know, the black-clad terrorists of ISIS now taking over city after city after city in Iraq. You've got Al-Qaeda, 58% more Al-Qaeda, more Salafist jihadist groups now across the globe than we had in 2010. There's no question but that he's a dangerous president. And that we've got to fight back, and that we've got to ensure that people understand the importance of American power and securing our freedom and security.
I have to leave it at that because I'm out of time.
Megan,
Mr. Gough, give you a quick last word, Mr. Vice President.
Last word. In the last 4 years, there has been a 58% increase in the number of jihadist groups around the world. That's according to a Rand Corporation study. Came out 2 weeks ago. There's a dramatic increase in terrorism, a dramatic increase in their capability, and a president who refuses to recognize that there is such a thing as a war on terror.
Thank you both so much for being here. It's the Alliance for a Strong America, your new group. We appreciate the preview.
Thank you.
Thanks, Megan.
Up next, what could be...
Okay, now, I wanted to play the whole thing because here's the problem we have. We have these two criminals, well, daddy and daughter, who said in another interview that the President of the United States is committed treason. They have formed a group, an organized group, to speak on what this president has done. It's only, this group was only to give Cheney a job. Because she went into daggone the state where she ran for office after being in Washington her whole life from Washington.
Yeah.
And
she's trying to become a Wyoming senator.
Become a Wyoming senator, couldn't even get a fishing or hunting license because she had not lived in the state long enough. Okay? I want to ask each one of you a couple of things, but I just want to lay it out first. One, they said that when we left Iraq, everything was fine. We had a stabilized government. They were all, when they left Iraq, the shooting was still going on. There was nothing stable, okay? And then he don't even know who he's talking to, Cheney. He calls her Reagan, then he calls her Megyn Kelly. Oh, by the way, I have to say Megyn Kelly has really, I mean, I didn't believe she had enough nerve to ask this man to do this. But evidently she did. And for the status of force agreements, this was done by George Bush. This wasn't done by Obama. They said no to George Bush when he was in office. They didn't want nobody there. They let everybody out. And the only reason why you got anybody there is because we got the largest embassy in the entire world. It's bigger than the freaking Pentagon. He said, now, 40 nations, he said, have a status of force agreement. We haven't invaded 40 nations. The last nation that I knew that we actually invaded was Vietnam. So that's wrong right there. And he says, Bin Laden. Oh, Bin Laden, that was nothing. I mean, forget Bin Laden. That didn't do anything. He doesn't even think of, he says, Robin, tell us, give me one of those facts that are not in dispute.
Everything they said was a lie. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Everything was a lie. Everything that they said was a lie. And it's just the continuing Republicans seeing something out of some kind of funky kaleidoscope glasses that they believed that they had nothing to do with. It's just crazy to me. And it's just crazy. And they have the money to form these PACs and these groups and make a mockery of the United States, try to make the President of the United States look like a fool. It's wrong. And people, you know it, I know it. Can we be the only four people on earth to realize that these people are lying every day?
I mean, just Thomas?
So, to begin with, I wanted to say this. Look, the Cheney's, I'm just discounting Liz. She's just, you know, she's maybe proud of her dad and trying to do something with her life, so whatever, who cares? Cheney is a, you know, quite well documented, very well known criminal and war criminal.
He has disrupted
and destroyed American politics for decades now. And I never, ever, ever say it of anyone, but, you know, I wish the man would hurry up and pass on because he's done enough damage. The one area I'll disagree with you fully on, Mike, is by even giving him airtime. I'm so over and done with him. He should be on trial at The Hague. The fact that he isn't means that we should forget he ever existed and let him just live out his life with his old cowboy hat on in the Wyoming wasteland and be done with him. The problem with giving him any airtime and fueling any of this is that somewhere, somebody, you know, at their trailer park watching Fox News is just going to believe in him and what he says. Everything he says is a lie. He's always lied. And it's not going to get any better. Now, not to displace the actual concerns and the actual geopolitical threat of having a destabilized Iraq, a civil war in Syria, and a resurgence of these terror groups and militias going nuts over there. That's very valid and of concern. However, Cheney has no standing and no valid points, and everything he said was junk. I mean, it's laughable, and I thought that Maddow and John Stewart and all did a very good job of putting him in his place, pointing out all of that and laughing about it. But
well,
after the laughter, we've got to deal with this reality that they've created. And I'm done with Dick Cheney. I can't stand the man.
I think Megyn Kelly did a fact impromptu destruction of Dick Cheney because she asked him the question like she was his friend, but she destroyed him.
I know. I thought she did a good job.
He never came back with any direct answer to her question. He did not come back. And I tell you what, there's a, if I can find this here, there is a Canadian group, and the name of this group is, it's an international volunteer organization that is looking to arrest, they tried to get him when he went to Canada last year, and they are waiting for him to come to cross over airspace of any sort where they can arrest him. They have the arrest warrant out for him and Rumsfeld and George W. Bush.
Right.
Last year, he sent a letter to the Canada. The lawyers against the war urge in a letter dated this last year, Sunday, the Toronto Police Chief William Blair and Ontario Attorney General John Gerson have a duty to arrest Cheney as a person suspected on reasonable grounds of authorizing and consulting, aiding, abetting, and failing to prevent torture.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, and I think he should be hunted down like a Nazi war criminal. But that said, it ain't going to happen. You know, we always in this country do everything we can, including let Nixon walk away and let Reagan pretend I'm old and befuddled. I don't know what you mean, drugs for guns and Iran and Contras. What? You know, so we let our presidents get away with literal horrific crimes so that we can keep the prestige of America. Fine. Over and done with. We're not going to prosecute Cheney. We're going to let him walk. But we need to, again, not give him a platform. And we need to actually support viable successes. You know, we're talking about Obama not being strong on terrorism. He is the man who finally, after, you know, 10 years of war, couldn't do a damn thing. He's the one who ended the threat of bin Laden. After all the, you know, 55 investigations into Benghazi and the thumping on the chest and all that, instead of that BS, he's the one who quietly had teams deployed and went down and captured the mastermind, and now he's going to go on trial for his crimes. And that is a success story that needs to be repeated. He didn't have to invade Libya. He didn't have to kill hundreds of thousands of people. He didn't have to launch, you know, a war into Argentina, you know, as some kind of sidelight because he wanted their economy. He did the right thing, and he did it in the right way, the quiet and professional way. And it's being taken care of now in a legal manner in court.
Well,
so that's the success story we should be promoting.
Well, let me say this to you.
Yes, go ahead.
Let me say this to you. The Cheneys have started this new nonprofit group. Could that be funded by the money that they used in Halliburton during the war season?
Oh, yeah, all the hundreds of billions.
We got to legitimize some type of money, right? So we got to make that dirty money cheap.
Well, Thomas, you're keeping track of that.
Put it in a nonprofit.
Thomas, you're keeping track of that. How much money was on that flatbed truck that was delivered by a C-1, on a flatbed in a C-130 that disappeared? How much money?
Oh, and that one flight, there was about a billion or so, but they ended up with, I think, there were 10 billion missing.
Okay.
But that was the one where they were famously literally shoveling the money out into the hands of their friends and partners, all laughing about it. But see, that's the crime there. You remember Cheney was the one who asked. He canceled the deal America was making when they asked for the money to be delivered to the militias over there. And he said, because we had it all tracked. And he said they wanted unmarked, no tracking, everything else. And then it all vanished. Somehow it got stolen, they said, and they've never been able to find it. And it's in a Swiss bank account.
But before we go, I have to play this because I believe this clip is a fitting end to what was said today. Just listen.
Glenn Beck. Can you believe what has happened here? Reconsidering whether we should have gone to war in Iraq in the first place. Now, I don't want to give it away. I want to let Glenn Beck speak for himself here. Let's get this started.
At the time, I believed that the United States was under threat from Saddam Hussein. I really, truly believed that Saddam Hussein was funding terrorists. We knew that. The unanimous belief was that he had weapons of mass destruction. There was also the element, and this really is what spoke to me, of bringing freedom to the people of Iraq for the first time in their long history.
Wait a minute. It looks like he's warming up to say that he might not have been quite right about that. Release the Kraken.
In spite of the things that I felt at the time when we went into war, liberals said we shouldn't get involved. They said we shouldn't get mired in another foreign mess. We shouldn't nation build. And besides, there was no indication that the people of Iraq had the will to be free. I thought that was insulting at the time. Everybody wants to be free. They said we couldn't force freedom on people. You know what? Let me lead with my mistakes. You're right. Liberals, you were right. We shouldn't have.
What is this?
Now, reaction from liberals upon hearing this was like that.
Oberyn like head explosions. What? Glenn Beck concedes. Could you imagine if I had told you 5 years ago, 10 years ago, Glenn Beck is going to come back around and say, hey, you know what? You guys were right. I was wrong. We should have never gone into Iraq. Well, here we are. I mean, I guess I should have done the graphic with the told you, right? Boy, did I ever tell you about this one. Now, I didn't predict that Glenn Beck would come back around to this, but almost everyone is now coming around, including Republican senators. Interesting. So now more from Glenn Beck's mea culpa.
But I agree with you. You cannot force democracy on the Iraqis or anybody else. It doesn't work. They don't understand it or even really want it, and they may be too immersed in their own belief of Sharia law to ever be able to embrace liberty, or at least at this time. And if people vote for Sharia law, then they vote for Sharia law. We tried. What can we do? We've lost thousands of American lives. We have lost thousands of lives on the Iraqi side. Tens of thousands have been wounded. We have spent $2 trillion. Let me say that again. $2 trillion. Upwards of 200,000 Iraqi citizens, security forces, aid workers, insurgents have been killed. Now, that's the conservative number.
So there's a decent number of details that he gets a little wrong there. Best estimates are $4 to $6 trillion that we've spent on Iraq, and best estimates on number of civilians killed are close to a million. But he's right, 200,000 is the conservative number in that sense. And it wasn't mainly that we thought Iraqis couldn't be free. No, that was not the main liberal argument against going into Iraq. The first argument was they didn't do 9/11. So we are attacking a country that had nothing to do with attacking us. That's kind of an enormous problem. And then second of all, there was a lot more doubt about weapons of mass destruction than he lets on or anyone let on at the time. But there, we read the articles inside the New York Times, not just the ones that Judy Miller wrote on the cover, but ones on page A17 and A27. They said, well, yeah, maybe, maybe not, right? And it turns out, of course, there were no weapons of mass destruction. And then the third part of it was not that they couldn't be free. It's that, look, there is no such thing as Iraq. Once you stir up that hornet's nest, then you're going to have Sunnis, Shias, and Kurds fighting one another. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. Once we broke it, well, then we owned it for all that time, and we spent all that money. And more importantly, our American troops' lives were lost, let alone the people that were maimed, let alone the Iraqi citizens that were killed. So he's underselling how right we were in some ways, but, hey, we'll take it, okay? We told him to fix his face. And he kind of fixed it a little bit. In fact, one more round of apology.
I have more of a chance of hacking off my loyal listeners and my audience by saying this, but so be it. Not one more life. Not one more life. Not one more dollar, not one more airplane, not one more bullet. Not one more Marine, not one more arm or leg or eye, not one more. The people of Iraq have got to work this out themselves. Our days of being the world's policeman, our days of interventionists is over. If we are directly attacked, so be it. But this must end. Now, everything that you have said about it's going to fall apart in the end was right. Everything I said that we could hold it together was wrong. We need to pull out, end this long, nightmarish involvement in this mess. We need to do the same in Afghanistan once and for all. We all agree. Enough is enough. Bring them.
Well,
Holy mackerel. I never, ever thought that we'd end the show with a whole bunch of Bekistan.
Woo!
Hey. You know, hey, even crazy
is right.
Becomes seen every
right
once in a while.
Well,
I'm telling you,
crazy,
that's
right
just something else.
Hey. Robin, what do you got to say to that? Robin? She can't believe it. She passed out.
Yeah, she was like...
I'm like, you know, I can't believe it.
You can't believe it either, right? I mean,
you know,
and
I guess that's what got Cantor out of office. These Tea Partiers are trying another approach. I don't know. But they're not off my watch list.
I just can't. Can you believe that he even said that? Can you believe it?
I'm speechless. But you want to know something?
And, what?
At the end of the day, they're still insane. And until they really realize the bigger picture and retract some of their rhetoric completely, then I might kind of believe them. But they're doing this to attract another base. It has to be.
Well,
all of those bipartisan moderates you were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I need to read, we got another minute, and I have to read this to end the show. When the truth is buried, it grows. It chokes. It gathers such an explosive force that on the day it bursts out, it blows up everything with it. Neil Zola said that. And that's what Glenn Beck has done. He has blown everything else up with it. That's what he has done. I want to thank everybody for being on the show today. I want to thank everybody for listening. And David, I want you to get better. And
get well soon.
That's right.
Yep.
And the four tops are going to take us out of here. I'll see you next week.
Take care. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Tom.
Bye.
Thank you, Greg.
Take care, Rob.
All right, Thomas.
All right. I think I'm going to go chase a falcon with the fat man. Cheers, Mike.